Amen. Thank you. Got it. He's a pro. All right. Well, once upon a time, I attended a church where the pastor was really good at speaking extemporaneously, which means off the cuff, not prepared. And we never really knew. Like, it was pretty normal for me just to kind of hear, like, these different things that he came up with on the fly of the moment. One of the highlights, I remember one weekend, he had been to White Castle with his family, and they got a Crave case. So he did a sermon based on the Crave case oath that's written on the box. Like, I remember that one. But we heard a lot of wild stuff, so we weren't really, you know, like, every week we just didn't know what was going to be said. We didn't think, you know, like, we took it as it came. But one particular Sunday, we had some family members with us, and that particular Sunday was a non-event for me, but because they were there as witnesses, it became memorable to us. And this week was kind of good because there was Bible verse and a Bible story, and the story was about Jesus walking on the water and Peter coming out. And the point of that sermon, so there was a point too, the point is, because if you don't know the story, Jesus walking on the water, Peter jumps out, and he takes a few steps, and he starts to sink, and then needs help from Jesus, and he survives, and we're going to do that story today. But the point of that sermon, he said, was to stay in the boat! Stay in the boat! And they had never heard that take before, so they thought, that's interesting. And I don't even remember what that meant. It meant something that he wanted to communicate to us that Sunday about maybe, I don't know. But I want to go to that passage this morning. And as we look at this story, we're going to actually look at it in a way that might be a little bit different too. It might be a way, if you've heard that story before, maybe it's a little bit different than the way that you've thought about it. And I want to say, if you are here with us this morning, and if you are not a Christian or not a churchgoer, we want you to know that we're glad that you're here, and that's the main thing. And we try to make it so that we don't assume a lot of religious background or not Bible knowledge or beliefs. We don't assume that. We try to make it fairly understandable. We don't always do it perfectly, but we just want you to know, hey, we're going to try to make it understandable. You never have to feel bad about not knowing about a Bible story. But we are going to tell one that's familiar to a lot of people. And so today's message, I encountered this story and a different sort of take from this book called The Expectation Gap by a guy. He's an Australian who came to the United States and was a chaplain and learned some really good things and took that into his pastoral ministry. So that is a big resource for this book. So I'm going to reference The Expectation Gap by Steve Cuss. And he's a pastor. His website is cusswords.com or .org. Any pastor who has that as a website, you know they got to be all right. Steve Cuss. Anyway, I'm just throwing that out there because I am definitely using him. I don't want to plagiarize him as a source. So let's go into Matthew 14:22. So we're going to read the story. So this is a bit long here, but just kind of listen here as we think about what's being told here. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, Jesus went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone. And the boat, filled with the disciples, was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "let me come to you on the water." "Come," Jesus said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when Peter saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why'd you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshiped Jesus, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." Now, we're starting this series, Jesus. I think it's like week three. We're going to be talking about Jesus this summer. And last week, we talked about Jesus' identity as the Son of God and how important that is for us. And here we see, again, they're worshiping him and acknowledging him as the Son of God. All right, so little pop quiz. We're going to try to keep it fairly easy. This was the hardest one, all right? How many people in this story are named, like their names are given? Two. Yeah, two. So we have two, and those names are Jesus and Peter. And so the natural thing to do with this story is to focus on the main characters. We have Jesus and we have Peter. Now, I'm not Jesus, and you're not Jesus, right? Now, Jesus was fully God. He's fully human too. Like, we need to talk about that too. Like, he knows what it's like to be human, but we can relate a little more easily to Peter. Because I don't know about you, but I've never walked on water. Have you? And I can't just do it. And I've been afraid. So Jesus isn't as relatable maybe here as Peter is. So the natural thing is to focus on Peter, relate to him. And maybe the lesson that we come out, maybe it's stay in the boat because he sank. Not by many people, but a few. Maybe it's be bold like Peter because he took a step in faith. He got to take a few steps on water. He was willing to risk it while the others weren't. So he got this great experience. And maybe, this is probably the most common one, it's keep your eyes on Jesus because if you pay attention to the waves, you'll start to sink. So there's all these different applications that we could bring about what God is saying or how we're trying to do something with this story. As we think about this, really, if we come out with some sort of a lesson on how what we're supposed to do or what we should be doing, honestly, it's just conjecture. Like, it's just some pastor or some teacher just saying things about how you should apply, or maybe you come up with how I should apply this to my life. And we are not going to get, we're going to try not to go there as much today. Instead, I want to ask, so two people are named. How many people are in this story? All right, well, let's go to the beginning, Matthew 14, 22. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat. Now, Jesus had lots and lots of disciples when he did his ministry on earth. This is a reference to the 12 male disciples that he had. He'd appointed them to kind of represent the 12 tribes of Israel. So disciple can mean a lot of different things, but this is a reference to the group of 12 that were with him. So we got 12 people in the boat, right? All right, and now I volunteer in a second grade class and I keep getting held back every year, so I can't quite pass it. But this is beginning of the year, second grade, so I can still track with it. So let's do this second grade math. Can we do it? 12 people are in a boat. One jumps out. How many are left in the boat? 11. So stay in the boat, right? I can't believe I just said that. 11. And Steve Cuss does the math here. I'm going to trust him. But he says that's 92% of the disciples stay in the boat. And so what are they doing? Were the 92% that stayed in the boat, the 11 out of the 12, were they wrong to stay in the boat? Was it because they didn't take risks? They didn't have faith? Is there something wrong with them? I don't think there was anything wrong with him. Quite frankly, especially if you can't swim, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me why you would just jump out of the boat onto the sea when it's a storm. Jesus is there. That's a factor. But it's perfectly sane how they were not the ones to jump out of the boat. Did Jesus ask Peter to jump out of the boat? Well, he didn't tell him at first. Peter asked for permission, and Jesus granted it. But were these other 11, were they wrong? Should these other 11 be like more like Peter? I don't think so. Jesus prayed a lot before he chose his 12. And I think one Peter was plenty enough. If you know any of the story about the disciples, Peter was one who spoke off the cuff. Consequently, a lot of times he put his foot in his mouth. He did some things that were regrettable. This is Peter's personality. He's bold. He takes action and talks first and thinks later a lot of times. Now, the one who's in the boat, one of the ones who's in the boat is a guy named Matthew. And he was a thoughtful person. He's actually like writing this thing down. He had a different sort of a personality. Do you think the lesson of this is to have a personality like Peter? Whenever something's going on, just think and go for it every time. I don't think so. Now, I don't think that walking on water for a few steps was one of Peter's regrets, but he had others. And it kind of fits his personality that he immediately says, "Can I come too?" And then sinks. And Jesus bails him out again, because that happens in the Gospels a lot. But as we think about that, even though those just two are named, there's other people in this story. Now, the Indianapolis Colts had a coach for like one season named Bruce Arians. I don't know if you've heard of Bruce Arians. He coached when like Andrew Luck was here. And then he went on to coach at Tampa Bay. And they won a Super Bowl with Tom Brady. And Bruce Arians, his whole persona as a coach is no risk it, no biscuit. I think Bruce Arians would love Peter. I think they're kind of cut from the same mold, because it's take chances or else. And so because Bruce Arians won one Super Bowl, that means that we should always risk it, right? Well, I don't think so, right? Sometimes maybe it's fun to watch the Colts that year. It was fun to watch some of his teams. But it also failed spectacularly a lot. He's been fired several times. Is that the way to live by? No, especially if you're not wired to be like that. Because we all have our different personalities. And the temptation might be, well, Bruce Arians won a Super Bowl, so I better live by no risk it, no biscuit. If there's a chance to take, I'm going to take it. So I'm going to throw all my money and place a bet and do these kind of things, because no risk it, no biscuit. Peter walks on the water. Live like that, right? Well, all these disciples are different. Again, I think it's good there's only one Peter, and they all have different temperaments, and Jesus chose the different one. What if all 12 would have jumped out into the water? Okay. So I don't think that the other 11 were bad by staying in the boat. And let's think about maybe what it was like for them too, because just Peter's the main character, and maybe we suffer a little bit from main character syndrome. But maybe that's not the message to us, where we have to take a lesson right away and be like Peter. Now, Once upon a time, I knew an inspiring Peter/Bruce Arians type disciple. And he had big vision. And as a young person, he was kind of like Peter. He was bold. And we were in a small town, and he had a big vision for a small town. And the big vision was there was a popular Christian music group coming, or Christian music group, and he said, "Let's have this big concert in our small town, and it will be awesome. Everybody needs to think big." And he said, "Go big or go home," was how he said it, similar to Bruce Arians, but go big or go home. And then as he was thinking about this, because it was going to cost a lot of money to book this, at the time, very popular Christian group to do a concert. He didn't know anything about ticket sales or promotions, but one night he was watching Field of Dreams. He's flipping through channels, and he heard that Kevin Costner movie, and the voice said, "If you build it, he will come." And he thought, "That's God. We just got to do this, and people will come." He learned the hard way that it wasn't heaven, it was Indiana. That only happens in Iowa. But he had the faith. He put it out there. He risked money he didn't have. He took a big, bold step of faith, and he ended up soaking wet. Now, fortunately, like the story, Jesus kind of bailed out, and somehow the Christian group, despite being canceled like the day before their concert, didn't make him pay. So he kind of just got back into the boat wet and with a lesson. So was the lesson going forward, just like for Peter? There's a lesson in it for him. So as we think about this and kind of what the Lord is talking to us about, we can be like Peter and get back into the boat and just be grateful. Again, Jesus called 11 disciples who were not like Peter. If everyone had been like Peter and the 12, I think it would have probably been a disaster. But they all had their strengths, all had their differences. So in the book, there's this quote from Steve Cuss that I want to use. We will grow in Christ sooner once we accept that we are very much like ourselves. And none of us can or should always be the main character of any given Bible story. All of us are different. There are a lot of different stories in the Bible too. And sometimes I know that the way that I've read stories, maybe even taught them, I've probably been one that have taught like this too. But there's this tendency to put pressure or look at these Bible stories as something I need to work on. I need to have more faith like Peter. I need to be bold like Peter. I need to do this. And it can create a lot of different pressure and expectation and anxiety. There's a gap of our expectations and then what really happens when our lives, because we're not made to be like Peter. We're made to be ourselves. And that Peter, after he encountered Jesus, he was still bold. He was still one who would speak from the cuff, but he did it in a more mature way. But his personality didn't change. The Lord kind of reformed it. Similarly, the guy Matthew, who wrote it down, he'd been a tax collector. He was good at keeping records. He probably kept to himself a little bit more. He didn't become like a Peter after he encountered Jesus. He wrote down the gospel. He used how God had wired him and the skills that he already had to serve the Lord instead of the Roman government. So thinking about like what the Lord wants to do, because I've felt these, looking at each Bible story as something to work on. I need to be bold like Peter. I should be brave like Esther. I should be loyal like Ruth. I should be confident like Paul. I should be passionate like David. I should be innocent like Jesus' mom, Mary. I should be wise like Daniel. And there are these pressure of these expectations. They can come and they can make us feel this pressure to almost become like a super disciple, where we have the strengths of some of these people without their weaknesses. And we don't see that God is calling us to listen to the scriptures, but he's not calling us to be like all the main characters of all the different stories. He's calling us, he's speaking to each one of us. He's present and he's made us all in a unique way. And we need to learn to listen to him. So again, as we think about that, I want to be cautioned as we look at these stories of Jesus and look at them as just another something I need to work on. Because what if some of our stories that we have are more than just lessons of what to work on and that we should be doing better, but they're stories that are meant to evoke something else. Gratitude, worship. What if this story, and a lot of these scriptures are written more to evoke in us a spirit of awe and wonder and worship more than just a self-improvement project? It's a question to wrestle with. Now, I don't want to, again, ignore all the characters in this story except for the main two, because there are 11 other people in this story. And what did the 11 other people do in this story? You know what they did? Stayed in the boat, right? They stayed in the boat. And as we think about what they did, again, we said that Matthew wrote it down. So he was taking notes in there. There was other guys. We know their names from other places. Thaddeus was one of, what was Thaddeus doing? We don't know exactly. There's another guy in the boat named John. John would also take notes. He didn't jump out in the lake, but he would write about this story too. And you know something really interesting about John's version of this story? He didn't include the Peter part. Why do you think John didn't include the part about Peter? I think it's probably because he had a rivalry with him. I mean, he couldn't resist when talking about Easter morning to mention, to do a little brag like, I got to the empty tomb first before, I'm faster than Peter. I want everybody to know this. Just kidding, sort of. I don't think that's the reason. But as John's, we think, writing later, I think he was maybe concerned that Peter's part of the story could be a distraction from what he really wanted people to know, that Jesus walked on water. The Peter one, it's a side story that Matthew told, but not John, because it's about Jesus walking on water. And John said he wrote, his stories are about like helping it evoke that sense of belief in us, that we will come to believe that Jesus is the Christ, that he's the Son of God. That's why John wrote. He wrote about Jesus' signs, not so we'd have all these, just so we'd have like a self-improvement plan, but so we would be caught up in someone with a sense of awe and gratitude, who's so much greater than ourselves, who's worthy of trust. So all these other disciples there, and they weren't just merely passive observers who didn't have faith. Listen to how Matthew concludes it in Matthew 14:33. Then those who were in the boat, I think Peter's probably part of this too, so it's probably all 12. Those who were in the boat, and by the way, so we got 12 disciples back in the boat. We've added Jesus, 12 plus 1. So how many people are in the boat now? 13. Probably 12 of them are worshiping one. But those who were in the boat worship Jesus, saying, truly you are the Son of God. This story ends in worship. Not just a lesson about you should have more faith or don't doubt or don't look. But looking at Jesus, it ends with awe and worship and reverence. Personally, if I'm part of this story, if I were one of the 12 and I got to pick whether worshiping Jesus warm and dry or being wet and cold, I think I'd rather be like the other 11, because I don't like being wet and cold. But whether we're more like Peter or the other 11, the sense is that the 12 worship with awe. And again, what if the story is not about giving us another something to work on, but evoking that awe and wonder? So to just to kind of reinforce this, I just want to play a little game here as we close out. But my son does this thing in Pass the Peace where he says, Jesus in points. But when I do that, I want to encourage you to say, wow, at the name of Jesus. Ready? Jesus.
Wow.
Wow. Jesus. Jesus. Wow. Yeah, a sense of wonder that it can evoke in gratitude. And I think that has the power to be awfully transformative for who we are, more than guilt and shame, but the power of worship and love and inspiration. We're going to have our worship team come back up. And as they're making their way back up, I just invite you, if you'd like to do, to pray in the way that Jesus taught his disciples to pray. So a version of it is written up on the screen, so I invite you to join me if you'd like to pray this prayer. Our Father in heaven, holy is your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.